This is Puget Sound Now, a look inside the issues happening in our communities around the Sound.
Yes, today we spring ahead and look at future leaders.
And we have decades of research that shows that women lawmakers are more consensus-driven, they're more likely to work across the aisle.
In this presidential election year, recruiting and training more women for political office. Younger voices and ideas wanted to discuss major issues.
And it's up to us to just come together and talk it out and look for forward-thinking solutions.
Seattle City Club's new Youth Leadership Initiative. Good morning, I'm Bill Swartz with my clock set ahead for the start of Daylight Saving Time. We have a presidential primary election coming up this Tuesday in Washington State. For now, there are two women candidates on the ballot, Nikki Haley, Republicans, Marianne Williamson, Democrats. Maybe a woman will be the front runner, a favorite 4 years from now, thanks in part to a nonprofit training program for women to run for office and win. And we're pleased to spend a few minutes on Puget Sound Now with Emily Carmichael, Washington State Director for Vote, Run, Lead Action. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
Vote, Run, Lead has been around how long, and what is the mission of this nationwide program?
Thanks. Great question. So Vote, Run, Lead was founded in about 2014 with the goal of recruiting and training more women to run for office across the country.
And now, in 2024, what's the goal of expanding the organization into what you call an action arm, and you're the Washington State Director?
That is correct. So starting last year, Vote, Run, Lead Action was launched. Now that's a 501c4 organization, which for those who are familiar with our tax code, that means we can get a little bit more involved in politics. It allows the organization to do more targeted and deeper work in key states. And so Vote, Run, Lead determined there were many key states in the western part of the United States that had a lot of potential. Our goal right now is to achieve 51% representation in our state legislatures. We're calling that the Run 51 Project. That's part of the reason, really the reason behind why Vote, Run, Lead Action was launched. Washington State is currently at 46% representation for women in our state legislature. So they looked at a state like Washington and said, we've got a lot of potential there. I think if women ran for every open seat in those elections, we would get to 51% representation in 6 years. So some states it's 100 years. So six is a much smaller number than 100.
51%, of course, is the total female population in the United States. So that only seems fair. You have college degrees in French and museum studies. So what led you to a group that empowers women in politics?
That's a really great question. You've done your research. Yes, I was a high school French teacher for 7 years here in Seattle, and I felt like I was doing what I could, you know, to educate the next generation and to do my part. And then when the 2016 election happened, I felt like I wasn't where I was needed most, that there was more that I could be doing to inspire, help shape the next generation, to help really affect change in my community. And so I just caught the political bug, and I kind of threw myself in with both feet. And I found another organization that also exists in Washington State that recruits and trains women to run for office that was getting started in 2017 in Washington. I discovered that organization and I got really involved there. And then I ended up kind of quote unquote quitting my day job as a teacher and eventually was running that organization. And now I'm with Vote, Run, Lead. I just found that was really where I was needed the most. And that's where I could most affect change in inspiring and training women to run for office and really change the face of politics in Washington State and in our country as a whole.
Emily, as you pointed out, the current Washington State Legislature is made up of 46% women. And is this an anomaly to have two U.S. senators who are both female, six congresswomen in our delegation also?
It is an anomaly that we've had since, 2001 was Senator Maria Cantwell took office, and then Senator Patty Murray took office, the oath of office in 1993. She was elected in the first so-called Year of the Woman. I say that in quotes. I know y'all can't see that because I'm on the radio, but we've had a couple of years of, Year of the Woman. And yes, that is definitely an anomaly. We've had two women governors. Most states have not had any. And the majority of our congressional delegation are women. So Washington has always been at the forefront. We are fourth right now in state legislative representation for women. For a while, we were the first state. We were number one. We had the most number of women in our state legislature. And then, you know, we had a woman governor, we had two women senators, a lot of women in Congress. So that's kind of been going back and forth where Washington State has been in terms of the representation of women.
Emily Carmichael is the Washington State Director for Vote Run Lead Action, a new arm of the longtime organization. I had a conversation recently with a neighbor who ran for city council and was successful. And I asked her, why are you doing this? And she said, I love organizing people and groups, having conversations and making a positive change. Is that the reason we're seeing more women willing to step up and become leaders?
I think absolutely. The research has shown us that, and this is not a blanket statement, it's not true of everyone, but a lot of times men will run for office because they're seeking power, they're seeking status, and oftentimes women will run because there is an issue or a problem in their community that they want to solve. And it could be something like, we want this stoplight at a dangerous intersection. It could be something that kind of basic. And women are really motivated to run because of issues like that, because they see what's affecting their neighbors, they see what's affecting their own families, and they want to make changes there. And we have decades of research that shows that women lawmakers are more consensus driven. They're more likely to work across the aisle. They bring more money back to their districts. They bring, and they're advocates for their entire community's needs. In short, they're just better. They're better legislators. They're better city council people. They're better county council people. And women pass more legislation that improves everyone's lives. And that's things like paid family leave, access to healthcare, protection from gun violence. When more women are in office, policies that are passed, they reflect the concerns of women and families, but it's really concerns that affect everyone. A lot of times we call those kitchen table issues. And that really is a great example of that. She, you know, loves organizing people, talking to her community. That is someone that is going to be great at serving an elected office. They are willing to talk to their community. They're willing to talk to the other people that are serving in that body with them. They're willing to compromise. They're willing to have the hard conversations and do the work that's really going to actually make change. I think too often we see people that want to be elected or that get into office and that aren't really prepared for the work that that's going to involve. And I think on the whole, women are more prepared for that. They're more driven to actually enact that change.
You said women are better at consensus building. Does your training teach them to be compromisers, yet push for their point and have civil dialogue in the whole process?
I wouldn't say that our training necessarily specifically focuses on that. I think that that's just in some ways an innate quality or characteristic of women. So our training, a lot of our training is focused on the nuts and bolts of running for office, you know, how to fundraise, how to write a stump speech, how to take your life story and turn it into very condensed and concise messaging that will appeal to voters. But also a lot of our training and a lot of the power in our training is in the community that's built among the women that are there in those training spaces and on the networking that happens. We hear overwhelmingly from women that have participated in our training programs that just being in the room was extremely powerful in and of itself. So in addition to all the practical knowledge that they gained, they also gained a lot of confidence. And we have a curriculum that we call Run As You Are, where we tell women, you are enough. What you have done in your life up until this point has prepared you to run for office. A lot of times women will think, oh, I have to achieve a certain milestone in my career, in my life, in order to be electable, in order to be, you know, eligible to run for office. But a lot of what we tell people is you are exactly what is needed now. You, all the experiences that you've had, your lived experience has prepared you to run. And which also brings me to the point that we do not have enough women from underrepresented communities. We do not have enough people in general from underrepresented in our legislatures, in any of our elected bodies, but we don't have enough women. And so what we're also focused on Vote Run Lead is recruiting people from all corners of the state, from all different community for many, many different communities so that we can have a legislature that reflects the constituents that it serves, that reflects what our state looks like. We want to look at the legislature and see that in our elected representatives.
How do you prepare these women candidates for the slings and arrows of politics?
That's a great question. And I think not being too, you know, Pollyanna about it, being very practical and honest with women before, you know, when you're talking about them running, when you're recruiting them to run, when you're training them to run, we have training topics on this. We talk a lot about safety when we're training now. And when I first got into this work, you know, 7-8 years ago, we were not talking about safety as much. We were not talking about the practical considerations, you know, how are you going to keep yourself safe? How are you going to keep your family safe? We're really talking about that now. We're being honest about it. It does require a certain thick skin in order to get into this world and to run for office. It's an incredibly brave thing to do, to put your name on the ballot. So I think being very upfront and practical about it, and then also equipping women with the tools that they need. I personally, and in the trainings that we do, we really emphasize that running a campaign on issues and on what you want to get done, as opposed to running a negative campaign about what your opponent is or is not doing, is the best way to go about this. But not everyone gets that memo. And so your opponent might be coming at you with a lot of negativity. And so talking to women about how they respond to that, I also overemphasize to people, do not read the comments. Have somebody else who's going to filter any negative mailers that go out. Don't look at that. Keep yourself focused on talking to voters, what you're going to do for your constituents, what are the issues that you care about, and try as much as you can to ignore all the rest, as long as it's not a safety concern. Obviously, if it is a safety concern, you need to be aware of that and you need to do what you can to keep yourself and your staff safe. But generally, focus on why you got into this in the first place. Knowing your why and staying true to that is really important.
Could the why be the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade and a woman's right to choose eroding in this country? Can that be part of the shift in paradigm in 2024 to see more female candidates?
Absolutely, that could be your why. If that is an issue that is important to you, and I think that's an issue that's important to most women, and we see polling on that. I mean, anybody could Google that the majority of voters in this country do not support the Dobbs decision, do not support the overturning of Roe versus Wade. So there are a lot of women that have been encouraged to run because of that. And also it really drove turnout in the last couple of elections. So I think that's definitely a why. But when we talk about someone's why, it's usually something that's personal to them. So if you have a personal experience with that, with reproductive health care and access to reproductive health care, then that absolutely could be your why. But your why might be, you know, public school funding, mm-hmm. or you know, the traffic in your community. I mean, and I'm not saying that to be flippant. I think to have a why that really drives you through the ups and downs of a campaign, it needs to be very personal to you. And your why is not necessarily separate from your platform, you know, your policy platform that you're going to put on your campaign website. It could be, you know, the power of unions or something like that. Maybe you were in a union, or your father was, or, you know, your grandmother or anything like that. And that fueled, you know, that kept your family going. It could be something like that. And then your platform is going to evolve from that. But often your why is sort of the grounding principles that keep you going.
If you're interested in running for office or just want to be part of the political process and learn more about candidacy, the website is voteRunLeadAction.org. Emily, what opportunities are there for people to become actively involved?
Absolutely. So definitely visit our website. From there, you can sign up for the VRL. VRL means Vote Run Lead. HQ, which is headquarters. And now that's a free resource full of all sorts of tips, videos, et cetera, to help you run for office. You know, if you want to write your campaign plan, figure out how to fundraise, you have to sign up for an account, but the account is completely free. And so that's a resource that anyone can access and that can really help people when they're running for office. You can also look at, we have two other websites. One is womensmajority.org and stateofmydemocracy.org. We have an amazing data team at Vote Run Lead, and they have put together those two websites that show all the statistics in your state And you can really drill down and see, you know, how many women do we have in public office in our state? So I would encourage people to go to those two websites and play around with that. It's got a lot of very interesting information. And then people can also contact me if you are interested in running for office. It's Emily, E-M-I-L-Y, at voterunlead.org. I am hoping to have some in-person training this year in Washington State, but I also am always happy to serve as a resource for any woman who's interested in running for office. Please contact me and we will get in touch.
The Emily is Emily Carmichael of Washington State, director of the new Vote Run Lead Action Arm. And many thanks for your conversation today on Puget Sound Now.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
In 1980, eight women got together to form what's called Seattle City Club, an organization open to everybody, providing a nonpartisan forum for ideas and debate. Now, the nonprofit improves the civic health of our Puget Sound region by bridging politics, sectors, and generations to really educate us and inform us what's going on in the world. How do we engage more young people, their minds and voices in all of this dialogue? Well, let's discuss. And let's welcome in Seattle City Club Executive Director Alicia Crank and a member of the Civically Engaged Youth Council Leadership Team, Brooke Roberts. Thank you both for your time this morning on Puget Sound Now.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. Thank you.
Alicia, in a presidential election year and so many issues pulling us apart in our region, in our world, I think it's a perfect time for a little civil dialogue. And that's what City Club does, right?
Yes, that's what we've been doing for the past 44 years now. You know, making sure that we are practicing and modeling civil discourse, as well as making sure that help people get more civically engaged in their communities.
And from its eight founding members, all women, what does City Club stand for in its mission statement or your core principles?
Well, it's really about making sure that we strengthen the civic health of folks in the Puget Sound region. So even though we're named Seattle City Club, we really are a regional organization, really, you know, tying into King and Snohomish counties, but through one of our programs, the Debate Coalition, which we can touch on as well, you know, we make sure to exercise this statewide by hosting statewide debates.
Tell me about your programs. They're pretty varied.
They are. The one that people know us most for is called Civic Cocktail. So we do that just about every month on the first Wednesday of the month, where we do different topics to bring various voices in around a topic. Sometimes it's as light as civic engagement with sports. We had the Kraken on at one point, talking about how they connect with other nonprofits in the community like REWA and Youth Care as ambassadors, or we've had discussions around Roe versus Wade. And the important thing is that we make sure to have more than one point of view that's on our panel, that's part of our discussion. We wanna make sure that we have a full dialogue and allow the audience to walk away with what they want to.
And you're not taking a position. This is open for dialogue and debate, and maybe people can find common ground.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we did learn, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, is, you know, really leaning into being content creators, not having these kind of discussions where once you're gone, it's gone. We want to make sure that we produce and record our programming so that others in the community can watch it at their leisure and be able to share it as well.
Before we chat with one of our civic engaged youth council leaders, Brooke Roberts, tell me, Alicia, why this is the time to get more young people involved with these issues that you have.
Well, it's long overdue. And, you know, I remember being a quote unquote young Dem back in the day. And I will tell you that one of the things that frustrated me about the process was that I was being told that this is what I'm supposed to do as a young person, as opposed to asking, how do I want to be engaged? So it can be really difficult to try to build up another youth program. There are a lot, but sometimes they're not very sustainable. And they're not ones that are really led by the youth themselves. So I really went into this idea this year of launching this Civically Engaged Youth Council to really kind of build it from the skeleton from there. So allowing these young folks who are already individually doing some great things in the community to come together and inform us older folks, what is it that we should be listening to, how we should be engaging with their age range from 15 to 24. How do we do that and to put us in a position to listen and to learn?
So let's chat with Brooke Roberts. He's part of the Civically Engaged Youth Council leadership team from Edmonds, Washington, one of my favorite cities. Tell our listeners what you're doing, why you want to be on this leadership team.
Yeah, so right now I currently work as an EMT full-time in King County, responding to 911 calls while attending school online at Eastern Oregon University. However, my civic engagement spans back about 4 years, back to high school, where I served on the City of Edmonds Youth Commission, which ultimately led to a spot on the City Council as student representative. And that's when I really dug into civic engagement and learned all about city processes, city systems, how local legislation is passed. That's when I started following the state legislature more closely, because I saw how, compared to the federal government, the state and local levels have a lot more impact on our day-to-day life. I served on the Edmonds Salary Commission, which was a sole body that set the salaries of Edmonds' elected officials last year. I'm involved with the 21st Legislative District Democrats as the second vice chair. And since January of this year, I've been serving as a board member on the Edmonds Waterfront Center Board. And really, my goal out of this is just to strengthen our community and really look beyond the perceived barriers that we have in our day-to-day life. We are all human. We have a story. And it's up to us to connect with that story and connect wherever we can. We are not different. Although we may have varying opinions, we all want the best for our communities. And it's up to us to just come together and talk it out and look for forward-thinking solutions.
Broad brush, for me, this sounds like a unique perspective for a young person in your age bracket, because I hear from so many folks in the teens, early 20s, they're checking out, especially at politics. They're saying, I can't make a difference. I'm tired of all of the, you know what, back in Washington, D.C., nobody's getting anything done. But you have this unique perspective of saying, look, if I take care of my own neighborhood and my city, we can impact change.
He's in the minority, but I think there's more people out there like him than we know, but we just haven't been able to reach them. And I think, again, they're all looking to find that niche that fits them. And there really isn't a lot of that out there right now. So that's why I'm really excited about how we're going to pull this together, and even having the breadth of experience already between the four young people that are part of this leadership team with very political backgrounds and beliefs.
Brooke, talk to me about the conversations you and your college pals have. Is it about homelessness, about abortion, about the war in Gaza? Or is it more of just local centric about, like you said, what can we do with the Edmonds waterfront?
So honestly, a lot of it's more centered around local stuff. As an EMT in King County, any legislation that any of the King County cities pass, especially Seattle, impacts my work and my life directly. Although I don't live in Seattle, I'm a direct stakeholder of the government in Seattle. And so we talk often about the homelessness issue, about rising prices of everyday essentials like gas, of food at the grocery store. Again, more local stuff like roads, park projects. I've opened my friends' eyes up to focusing at the local level, because it is so easy to get caught on whatever CNN or Fox or whatever the big outlets are covering when the biggest things happening are in front of our eyes. That's primarily what we talk about. And we talk about what we like, what we don't like, what we think could be more effective. As always, I encourage them to vote. And I have to do a great job. I have to do an amazing job at pushing them to get out to vote in their local elections. It's hard sometimes because I get so many excuses, but I got to do what I got to do.
Our guest on Puget Sound Now, Brooke Roberts and Alicia Crank. They're both with Seattle City Club, talking about a new civically engaged youth council leadership team. Brooke, stay with me on that idea. Presidential primary coming up March 12th in Washington State. Do folks in your age category even know it exists?
From what I believe, no. Honestly, from what I've seen on social media, no. It's not as blown up as actual presidential election right now, even though it is still just as important. It's up to us, the people that are currently aware, to do whatever we can to spread that awareness. I know if you took a civics course, it may seem obvious that presidential election year civics is going to be a primary, but it may not be obvious to most people. And so I think for whoever is aware right now, we have to do what we can to spread that awareness and push people to get out and vote.
Alicia, tell us about the mechanics of your civically engaged youth council leadership team. When do you hope to have them all together to share their collective ideas about our region? Because you're bringing in people from all over the state of Washington, correct?
Absolutely. So we're actually going to kick off our leadership council at our April 3rd civic cocktail, which we have at the Collective Seattle down in South Lake Union. And our entire event is going to be focused on this leadership team, about the things that they're going to be able to bring from a knowledge perspective, and also some ideas for us to be able to execute throughout the course of this year going into the next year. I would say our two major focuses for them this year is first the launch of itself on April 3rd, and then also, you know, prepping them to help with the statewide debates that we do as part of Washington State Debate Coalition. And that's going to be a heavy lift. And I do want to touch on something you just said, Bill, about, you know, presidential election and the fact that we might be voting in somebody new or not, but we're going to definitely be voting in some new people in the highest offices in this state. Because between the governor and the AG's race, not having an incumbent per se, this is really an opportunity for young people in this state to really make their voices heard and make a stamp in what's going to happen in the next few years.
And those leaders you elect, you know, they set policy, whether it's the environment, weaning us off of natural gas. These are issues that really impact your pocketbook, too. The gas tax in Washington state, they're all first and foremost issues. Who can attend these civic cocktails, Alicia?
Anybody and everybody. We believe in having it as an open door. You know, one of the reasons why we selected the Collective Seattle as our meeting place is because it's very accessible by car, by bus, walking, it's flat. And it's really a great time to be had there. There's so many different people from all walks of life kind of gathering. And I will say this is one of the few places that I've experienced living in Greater Seattle where I don't feel the Seattle freeze. So it's a very warm environment. It's one that promotes dialogue, civil dialogue. And we do intend on inviting elected leaders from the state and local levels to participate as well in that April 3rd event, because they are the ones that really need to hear what this youth council has to say.
For folks like Brooke who'd like to become involved with Seattle City Club, how do they do that?
Well, they can visit our website at seattlecityclub.org. In a couple of weeks, we will be updating our civically engaged youth council page to have applications available for youth around the state to be able to apply to become a part of the council. So very excited about that. And I think this is something that's been overdue. And I think it's going to be different than what people have seen before.
Brooke Roberts, what's your pitch to another young man, young woman to get involved with Seattle City Club or just their local community?
We're already paying the price for past generations, not looking out for the future. But now it's up to us to break that attitude, that social behavior, and create a better future for everybody around us. And this is going to play a huge part in enriching the civic dialogue among young people in Washington state and getting more and more people involved.
It's a good start. Alicia, give us your website one more time where people can find out information about your civic cocktails and how to get involved.
Yeah, so our website again is seattlecityclub.org. And you can also find us on Twitter and on LinkedIn and Facebook and all the fun places. So please come find us, see what we're about, and join us. We're doing some good work here, and we need you.
That you are. Seattle City Club's executive director is Alicia Crank, and a member of the Youth Council Leadership Team, Brooke Roberts. Thank you both for being our guest on Puget Sound Now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Are you confused about next Tuesday's presidential primary election in Washington state? You are required to check the Democrat or Republican Party affiliation box. If you don't, or select a candidate in the other party, your vote doesn't count. There is no party affiliation requirement for the November general election in Washington state, but you do need to be a registered voter. Make sure you read the instructions carefully and exercise your constitutional right. You can find Puget Sound Now on the podcast page of nwnewsradio.com. I'm Bill Swartz. We're back again next Sunday morning.
Thank you for listening to Puget Sound Now. Tune in every Sunday morning to learn about the issues happening in our communities around the Sound. Puget Sound Now is a public service of Lotus Seattle Corp.